So he explained, and wanted to know if I wanted to hear from the search committee, which was headed up by Charles. You can blame him. Oh, no, I guess not. You can't blame anybody but me. I'm the one who made the decision to come here. Yay. For me, anyway. Yay. Larry and Debbie became friends quickly. I didn't know Debbie very well because Larry wouldn't bring her to the minister's meetings. Actually, it's because she was still working, so, you know, it really wasn't his fault. Because we had lunch meetings, so it really wasn't his fault. Today, the two of them come back from a pilgrimage, a journey, a mission. And I can't think of two better people to bring us good news from the mission field. I always had thoughts that maybe I would be a missionary, but the problem is that most of the places that we need missionaries, there's hot weather, and I do not do well in hot weather, and you all know that. 85 to 95, right? About? I would have melted the first week. Yeah, a cool night would have been 70, and they put on hoodies, and I still would have been dancing naked in the moonlight, you know? But I'm so grateful and so proud that you all were willing to do that for us. As we begin this morning, and I turn it over to you, Larry asked me to read Mark chapter 9, verse 11. Then they asked him, "Why do the scribes say that Elijah must come first?" That's not what you wanted. I thought he said 9-11. Do you want 11-9? Come here. My brother, was it 11-9 maybe?
Oh, she read the wrong scripture. He thought she was going to read the scripture. We could ask her to read. Anyhow.
Well, I was at 9 before it turned in. I really thought he said 9-11. Because I thought in my brain, that's interesting. Well, maybe it'll come to you as you do your presentation.
I know it's fair.
We'll just see it.
Okay. It's bringing cool water to people.
No.
And you're asked to bring cool water. I think it's 31 now.
Okay.
No.
No.
No. I could find it on my phone, but I turned it off and I'd have to turn it on.
Oh, just go on. We're going to bring cool water to somebody. Larry?
Yes.
You want to start, or is your lovely wife starting?
And talk with us. I bring you greetings this morning Before, as Pat always knows, when I would stand in front of the church, I would bring you greetings from the regional ministry. But today I bring you greetings from Global Ministries, which is your ministry of overseas missions in your name and through your gifts to Global Ministries of the Christian Church Disciples of Christ and the United Church of Christ. And so I bring you greetings from them. I also bring you greetings from our partner in Ghana, the Evangelical Presbyterian Church Ghana, that Debbie and I served for our 3 years in Ghana. And I'll go ahead and do the commercial up front, and then we'll get into the mission itself. You will find on both tables in the back these yellow cards. And on the other side, you're welcome to fill out your name. If you want to know more about the work that Global Ministry does, or if you have a particular interest in a particular area, maybe you're interested in the ministries that Debbie and I did, which was teaching for me at a seminary. Debbie's was medical. Maybe you're interested in water projects. Maybe you're interested in development projects. Global Ministries is involved in all these areas. And if you'd like more information or to be kept up to date, you can check the things that interest you in Global Ministries and either leave it on the table or give it to Debbie and me, and we'll make sure it hits the Global Ministries and you will receive information for that. I would ask us to join in the word of prayer. Gracious and living God of the whole world, may the meditations of our hearts and minds together be acceptable in your sight. May our sharing together your word of our brothers and sisters be welcome. May we know that we are together in spirit. Amen. The passage we didn't read today is somewhere in Mark 9. It has to do with giving a cup of cool water to one who is thirsty. This is the blessing. And it's a short passage. It's one verse. But I think in many ways it sums up the people of Ghana. The short story, I won't go into the long story, but the short story is that on a long journey from where we lived in Heki to Accra, the capital city, takes about 3 hours and begins at 2 o'clock in the morning. By the time you get to Heki, or by the time you get to Accra, you know you've put in a day of 3 hours of travel. But it's hot in Ghana. It's always hot in Ghana. And as the day went on, Debbie and I were very hot, and we saw a woman with a large tray on her head piled with pouches of cool water. And as I was digging in my pocket to pull out the money to pay for 2 pouches of water, there was a woman who was coming along the sidewalk. And before I knew what was actually happening, the 2 packets of cool water were in my hand. This woman who I barely saw, who I will never see again, whose name I do not know, simply bought the water and gave to 2 strangers on the street. This represents the people of Ghana. The people of Ghana are absolutely, their name is hospitality. Anywhere in the country of Ghana, the people want to serve. The people do not know strangers of any kind. They will greet you on the street. The little children, Debbie may tell you a little bit more about that later, but the little children that would be in our neighborhood would come to us. And what's the Yebo? They would say yebo, yebo, which basically means white person. That's another story. But if there were five children, you would have to greet each one individually. You couldn't just greet one. And this is Ghana. The people are hospitable. They always wanting to be helpful. They're always wanting to share. They're always willing to give. And it doesn't make any difference who you are, where you are from, whether you've ever met before or not. We eventually became very close friends with a taxi driver in Accra. Accra is the capital city. It's a modern city. It's crowded. There are several million people who live in the area of Accra. But we had made friends with one taxi driver. And anytime we would go to Accra, particularly in certain areas, they would say to us, "Oh, we'll let Jerry know you're in Accra." People began to know that Jerry was our particular friend, or if we got into a cab, how much is the cab? What would Jerry charge you? The people are hospitable everywhere in the country. It is an extremely hospitable country. I have had the opportunity to serve in Botswana and South Africa. I have had the opportunity to be parts of mission groups to Honduras and to Cuba. And I will say without any qualms at all, of all the countries where I have served or I have visited, the Ghanaians are the most hospitable people in the entire world, bar none. So, what did I do for 3 years in Ghana besides sweat a lot? I was there to serve you with our mission partners. Global Ministries does not just throw a dart at the map of the world and say, "We're going to send you here." Global Ministries works with over 50 partners around the world. And as I had mentioned when I held up the little yellow card, some of those partners are involved in teaching, some are medical partners, some are religious partners, some are development partners, some are water project people. We have a whole variety of skill sets needed around the world and requested around the world. Global Ministries with their partners matches individuals with needs and with their partners around the world. Global Ministries receives requests from the partners. The partners say to Global Ministry, "We have a need for a teacher at our seminary," in my case. "And the skills that we need for this particular teaching job, we don't have anyone here in Ghana who can fulfill those needs." And so Global Ministry then begins to look at who are candidates, who are people who have said, "We are willing to go to Africa or South America or wherever," that have these skills that would be willing to match with our mission partner. So again, it's not just Global Ministries deciding, "We have a great idea and we're going to send this person." But it is a partnership that we are linked together, that we serve with one another and we share with one another. And so for 3 years, I was called to be a guest lecturer at the Evangelical Presbyterian Seminary in Pekki, Ghana, through the Evangelical Presbyterian Church, Ghana. The subjects which I taught were Old Testament studies, church theology, and, where am I today? I don't know where my mind went today. church theology, exegesis, And sacrament, church and sacrament, church and sacrament. Thank you. These were the areas that I taught with the seminary. It was exciting to be with these particular students that were there. The college was divided into two basic groups, two main groups. One was ministerial, the other was music. The seminary was founded in 1841 by German missionaries. And the German missionaries remained there until the beginning of World War I. Ghana, by this time, had become a British colony. And in colonialization, the colonial rulers did not really pay a lot of attention to where traditional people would be and where they lived. When the colonial rulers decided that we wanted this area, that's the area they would take. And so the fact that we serve Ewe people that today are in Ghana and Togo, and some speak English and some speak French, has to do with a long history of colonialism and how lines were split. But the church, the German church, as World War I came along, the Ghanaian government, or the British government, wanted the Germans out of their colony. The church had a long history there and didn't want to leave what had been built up. And so they asked the Scottish Presbyterians to come and to take over all of their ministries, all of their churches, and all of their facilities. And so today, the Evangelical Presbyterian Church Ghana has a strong relationship with both the Presbyterian Church in Scotland, which, by the way, the disciples' roots come out of the Presbyterian Church in Scotland, and also the Bremen German Church in Germany. Classes are taught in English. This is by law in Ghana. All classes in Ghana are taught in English, although the local languages vary from section to section of the country. And so our students sometimes could speak up to four or five different languages, not only local languages, but English, French, and German as well. The students we had for the ministerial side were of two kinds. One were those who were studying to become ordained ministers. They would study at the seminary for 3 years, and then they would do an internship for a year before they would become ordained. The other set of students also studied for a 3-year period, but the way that the year was set up, their time frame was a little shorter. These were people studying to be lay pastors. They already had full-time positions in the communities where they lived, but they also felt a deep connection and a call to ministry and to serve their local congregations, either to assist pastors or to preach the word on Sunday morning because there was no other pastor available. And so they would come and train for lay ministry for a 3-year period, and then they would be commissioned to serve in the local community wherever they were from. And they would continue to be full-time with their particular jobs. The other half of the seminary was music, which was introduced into the seminary in the 1970s through our Brothers and Sisters of the United Church of Christ in Nebraska, not too far away. And since then, the music department began as sacred music, but over time it has developed and it has evolved. It is both instrumental and vocal. It has It is now both sacred and secular, and now entering into the process altogether is music history, which includes not only European history or European music and European history of music, but also African and Central American. So that there's a variety of types of music, but particularly with an emphasis on European and African and on Ghanaian music itself, the history of Ghanaian music and what is Ghanaian music. My teaching was exciting. I enjoyed meeting with the students very, very much. It was different. In the Ghanaian system, most of education is by rote. The teacher would stand in front. The teacher would give a lecture. There may be like your old-time multiplication tables where you learn what everything was and then you recited it back. That is mostly the education system in Ghana. I come in from a totally different understanding of what education is all about and how education is taught. The seminary leadership was absolutely wonderful. This is what they expected. This is one of the things they could not offer their students. They could not offer their students a different style of education, a different style of teaching. It took a while for us to kind of get on a footing with the students. First of all, they had to get used to my English, totally different from their English. Sometimes we had a vocabulary issue because words, even though they're in English, don't necessarily translate. Also, the students weren't quite sure from time to time when I would throw a question at them, was I expecting an answer or was it rhetorical? And when I did expect an answer, you could see, what's the correct answer? What's the correct answer? And I would finally say, you know, I'm not looking for the correct answer. And somebody would finally be brave enough and give an answer, and I'd say, great, and who can add to that? It took a while. It took a while. But the students began to understand and have a different style of education as we began to have more and more conversation with one another. And Debbie and I want to leave some time for that today, too, with you. But we began to have some conversation in those kinds of things. The students, absolutely gracious, as is the country. I would be greeted in the classroom in the morning with a bottle of water. They would make sure I had the markers, the erasers, everything that I needed set up in front of me. I even had one student who absolutely insisted after class of carrying all my books home for me. They also took some getting used to that when a student was asking a question, they would stand up and address me. We got over that pretty quickly. But I absolutely enjoyed every minute of teaching and being with the students, learning from them as well, because, again, I'm Western. I'm American. I don't think in African terms. I don't know a lot about, or I didn't then, I learned a lot more. I didn't know a lot about Ghanaian history and Ghanaian traditions. And so when we were talking about Old Testament and issues of justice and issues of serving people and issues of leadership and what did these things look like, I had a bit of a void. I could only share with them what I knew from my traditions. I could only share with them what I understood as a white Western male. But again, as we got to know one another, I would say, well, these are my examples. What examples do you have from Ghana? What can you share with me from Ghana? Where do you see this kind of a thing happening in Ghana? Where do you see power plays happening? Where do you see issues of justice not being met in Ghana? And we began to have those conversations as well. Again, something new to them, but I was learning as much as they were, I hope. That I was learning more about Ghanaian culture, more about Ghanaian people, more about their education system, more understanding of worship and their understanding of God and their understanding of the Holy Spirit as we taught with one another. I'll say one more thing about teaching and then I'll let Debbie talk a little bit about her work. Long in March of 2020, in Ghana came along this thing called
COVID.
Thank you, you got the idea though, but this is a conversation.
We're like our students in our scary
answer. Yeah, yeah. COVID. A thing called COVID. And like other places, like some places around the world, in Ghana, immediately the president of the country shut down the country. Debbie and I had been lucky enough that we had gone to Accra. We had to renew our residency and our work permits. We would make a trip to Accra about every 6 weeks for our major grocery shopping. The day that we returned from Accra was the day the country was closed, which meant that schools no longer had classes. Classes could not take place. Travel within the country was forbidden. Travel in and out of the country was forbidden. Groups being together of over 14 were forbidden. Weddings, funerals, any kind of gathering, worship, was forbidden in the country. So for a while, there wasn't much for Debbie and me to do. We were at home a lot. We read a lot. But COVID also had an upside to it. As things began to open up and as we began to have classes together again, and as we began to come together, one of the things that Debbie and I had discovered happening here in the U.S. was more and more churches were going online. There were more and more churches that we could tune into in Ghana and be a part of the services. Sometimes interacting in the services, depending on how it was set up. The services were different. All of us were challenged by COVID to understand that church can take place many, many, many different ways. And it can take place even if we can't come together. The advantage of what took place when I was doing church theology and sacrament is before COVID, I could only share with my students about different traditions. I could only share with them what a Catholic tradition might look like, or a disciple tradition, or another tradition of some kind. With COVID, now I had a plethora of worship services all across the United States, all different varieties, all different kinds. And when the internet was working, sometimes, I was able to set that up and show students, and we were able to discuss about worship and what this looked like and how this worked and where did that tradition come from being actually able to view. Before COVID, that wouldn't happen. It didn't happen. There was very limited way of being able to show a variety of churches. So even though COVID wreaked havoc on us in terms of having to close down, as things began to come back, we found some new ways, again, of teaching and of sharing with one another across boundaries, reminding us yet that we are brothers and sisters regardless of where we live, regardless of skin color or languages. We are all God's children, and we are one, and we're much closer and much more interconnected than what we might think that we really are. I'm going to share some other things later, but I'm going to let Debbie share now about her work.
So thank you all for inviting us and supporting us for the last 3 years in our ministry. And I know a lot of you are familiar with Larry and his relationship with the church. I myself was raised a Catholic, and then from there kind of left the Catholic Church to go on to seek something else that I felt faith-wise that I needed. And I eventually ended up in a UCC church in my old hometown in Union, Illinois. And from there, that's where I had met Larry. He had come to our church at that time to be an interim minister for, were there 2 years?
Two years.
And at the time, I was married, had 3 children, and was working as a medical assistant. That was my profession. And later on, my late husband passed away, and I kind of reconnected with Larry after he had moved to Dexter, or to Bloomington, Illinois, to serve the church there. So I always thought, since I was a very young teenager, that I would really like to be a missionary, or I would like to go someplace and do something that God wanted me to do. So I kept thinking about all this, and after the death of my late husband, and after I raised my children, and done all the things that as a mother and as a daughter and as a worker was supposed to do, I thought maybe it was time for me to do something different. So I thought about going to the mission field, but I didn't know how to go about it. After Larry and I had met, and then we had started dating, we had talked more about it. He wanted so much to go back to the mission field. So God opened up that time for us to do that. So we were both able to go. Larry, like you said, went as a teacher at the seminary, and I went as a healthcare worker. And the healthcare system in Ghana is a lot different than what it is in the United States. They do have a national health insurance that people can buy into, and it's very financially easy for them to do it. But most don't do it just because it's a government thing, and they rather stay with their holistic and their tribal type of cures and herbal therapies. So when they come to the hospital, they come to the hospital as like the last step before they're going to pass away. So we have a lot of elderly people that come due to respiratory problems, heart problems. There were a lot of auto accidents in the area that we took care of, a lot of wound injuries. We also had patients that would come that had AIDS, had tuberculosis, and we would have to treat them. So my position there, I worked at the government hospital, and I also worked at a small clinic outside of our town. At the hospital, I pretty much did everything that I would do here as a medical assistant, plus a little bit more that they just allowed me to do. I would give injections, I would pass medications, I would do wound dressing changes, remove sutures. We didn't so much do the physical care of the patient, like the bathing and the feeding. That is all the responsibility of the patient to take care of. There was no food served at the hospital. The patient's family had to always bring their food in to feed them. They had to help them, like I said, with their washing and bathing. So it's a lot different that way. Medications that the patients get too, the family has to buy the medication and then bring it to the nurse's station for the nurse to be able to, what they call, distribute the medication to the patients. So whereas here, you go to the hospital, everything is pretty much done for you. You know, you have your towels there, you have your sheets there, you have the aides come in and help you with whatever you need. The nurses bring the medications to you. You don't have to go buy them. Food is served to you. And that's the, one of the biggest differences I saw as far as the physical part of the healthcare. The other part that I really noticed was the availability of the services that the Canadian people can get versus what, you know, the more, I guess, more industrialized countries can get. In the hospital that I was at, it was a government hospital, so everything was minimal. Our oxygen, we would get big tanks of oxygen in, very limited. We had two patients on oxygen at one time. Within 2 days, we were out of oxygen, and we would have to wait for our next shipment that was coming from the government. So that was limited. The hospital surgery, which is what they call theater, was very limited. They could only do minor repairs, minor surgeries. We did have American doctors across borders that would come once a year. They would come and they would do all kinds of surgeries, hernia surgeries, hip surgeries, and any kind of major surgery they would do for the patients there, and that was only for a 10-day period. So patients would have to get on a list and wait, and fortunately for them, it was paid for. They didn't have to pay anything. It was all part of the program. But our hospital there that we had, our doctor's staff, very little surgeries could be done. Anything major, the patient would have to be sent out to one of the bigger hospitals in Accra or Po, the regional district. So it would make me kind of sad when I would go into work and I would see things that seemed so easy to do and just so simple and something that should just be done, but that's not how it is there. And my thought was, you know, I would get kind of frustrated, but then I think these people are doing what they can do with the best thing that they can do with what they have available. And I don't know that it's not like it was less than what was needed. It's just I know that there was a lot more that could have been done for them. So that part was kind of hard to take. The clinic that I worked at was a community clinic, and that anyone would come in for, like I said, dressing changes, baby could come for immunizations. A lot of hypertension was there, so they would come for that. Diabetes, they would come. They would come, that was just a quick little check. They would be taken care of and they'd be on their way. Anything major was sent to the hospital. So I think what I learned is, as far as being in Ghana, is that you can do with a lot less than you think that you can. And people there are just as appreciative of the stuff that they have as what someone who has everything they can ask for could be. And it's just kind of a blessing just to see that they have that kind of an attitude. The community that we lived in, like Larry said, was very, very good to us. Like every morning on my way to work, you know, we'd be greeted, Yebo, Yebo, good morning, and we would. You would have to address each individual child that was there because they felt slighted if you didn't. So that was a nice thing to see with them. The people helped us with anything that we needed. They had women and children that would walk around with these humongous metal trays on their head. And on top of these trays were stacks, sometimes 24 inches tall, of all kinds of goods. It would be vegetables, it would be rice packets, it would be sugar. Sometimes they would have soap. And they would walk around the whole community selling these things door to door. And I tried one time to help one of the younger girls pick this up to put it on her head. Yeah, I couldn't believe the amount of just the tray itself, how heavy it was, plus everything else on top of it. So it's just amazing how they learn to do these things because that's what they're used to. Here, we wouldn't think of going door to door selling something like that. We would run to the store to take care of it. And then we didn't have, in Pekin, where we live, we didn't have any big grocery stores. We had what they call traders. So they would have, a lot of times they were the train cars, the metal containers, metal containers, that they would make into a little store, and you could go in there and you could buy all kinds of things. You could buy, you know, canned vegetables, juices, coffee, anything that you would need on a daily basis, eggs, vegetables. Limited, but it was enough for anyone to get by on. So that was kind of our life in Pekin. We had no transportation. We didn't have our own car. Like Larry said, we would have to take the troll if we wanted to go to the bigger city, and that's a huge 15-passenger van that they would stuff sometimes 17, 18 people in. But anywhere around the city or the village that we would want to go, we would either walk or we would take a taxi. Taxis were always abundantly available. But the roads in Ghana are horrendous. Huge potholes, rocks. If it rained a lot, there would be trenches down the road, so travel was not the easiest there. So we chose not to, to have our own vehicle and chose not to drive. And that's one thing that we do regret. We weren't able to go out and see more of the country that we would have liked to see because of the travel situation. I just am very glad that God has given me the opportunity to be able to go there and see how other people live, see their health care, help them with their health care as much that I could, and that He kept us safe. And like I said, I thank all of you for your support over the last 3 years and for having us today and for Pat being such an inspiration to us. So thank you very much.
Debbie mentioned we didn't have a car. I did not drive while I was in Ghana, but I am in possession of a legal Ghanaian driver's license. That's another long story we won't go into at this point. I want to talk a little bit about worship itself and worshiping with the people in Ghana, but Debbie had hit on something about the little stock shops. The people of Ghana are extremely entrepreneurial. They will develop little shops, they will develop stores, they will have an idea of
Offering was not called offering, it was called celebration.
This is our time of celebration. This is our time of thanksgiving. This is the time that we show God how grateful we are for God in our lives today. And so the offering time was a time of celebration. They had what they would call offering drums. It varied from church to church what the offering drum might actually look like. But they would have an offering drum or two or three in front of the church. And the bands would begin to play, the drums would begin to drum, and the people would stand up and begin to clap and sing and dance. They would dance forward, placing their money into the drum and dance back. Offering could often take 30 to 45 minutes of a worship service that we knew would last no less than 3 hours. Don't expect a worship service in Ghana to be any less than 3 hours.
Remember that.
An offering was often 45 minutes of that time that we would spend together. Another part, usually when you put all of the music together, that was probably an hour in itself, because there might be two or three different groups who would simply want to sing that Sunday morning. And they would be invited to stand up and sing. There may be a choir, there may be a solo, there may be something that's instrumental. That was all a part of worship, because people were lively. People wanted to celebrate when they would come together on a Sunday morning. I would often tease our principal and our vice principal particularly. You might have heard that in Ghana, it's hot. It's hot in Ghana. And yet, because of the tradition of Presbyterian and the Western Presbyterian Church, what was I expected to wear on a Sunday morning? And what kind of robe, Pat? We wish.
A
academic black gown.
Oh, no.
Oh, yes. Which I reminded them, this comes from Europe. The academic black gown is heavy. It's hot. It was made and designed for teaching classes in Europe in the Middle Ages when they had no heat. But that's what the missionaries taught us. Wow. So there are those kinds of things that we work back and forth on. I was expected, if I would have stand up in front of them dressed as I am today to bring a message, they would have been insulted. This is not proper dress for a pastor to wear for worship, if he's going to preach. So as we began to look and share some of these traditions, we began to share where some of those traditions came from and what some of those traditions were about as we would come to worship. As I said, worship was always very lively. There were great times of celebration that would take place in worship itself. Whether you were in a small congregation, in a small community, or you were in a larger congregation, such as the congregation where Debbie and I worship, there was always lively, always a lot of music which was taking place during worship. Debbie and I have done a lot of talking. We've shared a glimpse of our work. We've shared a glimpse of the people of Ghana and our living in Ghana. Again, we want to thank you, because this was your ministry that you allowed us to do on your behalf. And we are very, very grateful that we've had that opportunity and to come back and to be with you this morning. But we are open to our house psychotic on cat. We're not to 3 hour point.
No.
Okay. Do we have time for a few questions?
Anybody have any questions?
For either one of us.
What's the life expectancy of a gun?
I believe it was in the 60s. You know more about that. In the 60s.
What's the average income?
I don't really know what the average income was. Couldn't answer that. I should probably know that. Do you know that?
One of the things that I think is difficult about that question is because they are such a giving people that when somebody's in need, people just make sure that their needs are taken care of. They have jobs and incomes and things like that, but they also share. And because of that, the income levels are not as important as just making sure everybody is cared for, I think.
I think a lot of that, and then again, so much of it is entrepreneurial, that people set up their own little business, and it's all done in cash. We had a friend that we made. Henry was a good friend, became a good friend of ours. We met him because he was our IT guru. We needed a lot of help with IT, and so we met Henry because he came to our house for IT work. We also discovered that Henry taught IT at the high school. He taught IT at the seminary. He had a stationery shop, a printing shop, and a bar.
Yeah.
And he ran them all. We introduced him to iced tea, and we converted him to iced tea.
So now he has an iced tea shop, too. I just want to first, yeah, Tina.
I just wanted to know about how they celebrated their communion and their
communion Lord's Supper.
Well, first of all, it was Presbyterian. So the church would celebrate communion on the first Sunday of the month, which had to be led by ordained clergy. Only ordained clergy could preside at the table. And in all of our experiences, you may have found something different somewhere, but in our experiences, the people would come forward, and there would be some kind. Before COVID, it was almost always a piece of bread and passed on. After COVID, they became a little more creative in some things. The thing that bothered Debbie and me mostly was that communion, once the words of institution was done, anybody who was clergy or spouse of a clergy in the congregation came forward around the communion table and received communion before the congregation. Now, as you know, I grown always a disciple of Christ. That always bothered us, but that was part of the tradition.
As one who left the Presbyterian Church. Yeah.
But that's
very, I mean, that is traditional Presbyterian, you know, especially Scottish Presbyterian. You know, it's just their tradition, and that's what they've learned.
So she asked me, she
said, we're going to ask Debbie and Larry to stay for a few minutes after worship, and they'll be, you know, at the tables and stuff, and so if you have more questions, you can have some informal conversation with them. But for right now, can we give them a huge thank you?
Thank you. It was wonderful to be here. We do have two different, one display are some things we brought back from Ghana. The other display is about global ministry and how you can be more in touch with the world for global ministry.
And then the next time you'd like to make him let you talk more. Okay. What we're going to do is we're going to jump to the invitation to communion.